The bell rings on Black Friday. From APM, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Friday, November 23rd, 2012. Coming up, we'll find out all about the importance of this day for retailers and for the economy. We'll also find out about a big merger between two companies that very few people know anything about. It's all coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
But while you were eating that turkey, two giant companies were inching ever closer to a $33 billion marriage. Glencore, the Swiss commodities trading firm, is trying to take over a mining company called Xstrata, and the deal just got a stamp of approval from European regulators. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the details. And Stephen, I guess we should start with just an explanation of what exactly these two companies, Glencore and Xstrata, are.
Well, Glencore is a huge commodity trading company. It trades in anything from oil to coal, wheat, corn, barley. It's very big in copper and zinc, which means it plays a key role in supplying the car industry, for example, and in a wide range of consumer products and appliances that we use every day. It once owned Xstrata, a mining company, spun it off. Xstrata grew to be bigger and more profitable. Now Glencore has cleverly engineered what will, in effect, be a takeover of Xstrata.
So if that takeover goes through and gets its final stamps of approval from regulators, would there be an impact on consumers around the world?
Perhaps not. It's going to change the mining business. I mean, it's going to mean that one company is going to dig the minerals out of the ground, refine them, transport them and sell them. Is it going to mean lower prices, though, for consumer products? A question for mining analyst Rupert Nathan.
I don't think that would be their prime objective. Whether prices do fall or they're more keen, I think that would be incidental. The objective would be to ramp up revenues in order to reduce costs, increase profits.
He says this merger will shake up the mining world. The combined group's likely to seek more takeover targets and could soon challenge the dominance of the world's top three mining companies.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Jeremy.
Well, here in this country, retailers will be hoping today that consumers are not going to hold back spending because of concerns over the fiscal cliff. That package of spending cuts and tax hikes has many industries on edge, and they want to make sure that their concerns are being heard by members of Congress. So they're lobbying. But which industry has done the most lobbying so far? Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
So maybe you're thinking defense contractors are the most active lobbyists in the fiscal cliff debate. Nope. It's education groups. That comes as a surprise to even the most seasoned campaign finance types. Sheila Krumholtz heads the Center for Responsive Politics.
We don't think of education as being a heavy hitter among lobbying organizations.
Krumholtz says 421 organizations hired fiscal cliff lobbyists this year. Most of them, 91, were education groups, and they spent more than $67 million so far. They've got a lot at stake, like federally funded research programs. Terry Hartle is chief lobbyist at the American Council on Education. It represents about 2,000 colleges and universities.
Scientific research funding, if we fall off the fiscal cliff, will be cut about 8% across the board.
Hartle is also worried about education tax breaks that are due to expire at the end of the year. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Well, as we mentioned, it is Black Friday, and let's get right to some analysis now of what the importance of this day is for our economy with Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, how important is this day really for retailers?
Well, it's probably 10 to 15% of the total sales are going to do for the holiday season. So that's less important than it has been in prior years, but it's still important enough that no one can afford not to pull out all the stops and try and get as much done as they can.
And how have things changed in that regard now that there is Black Wednesday? A lot of stores are open on Thanksgiving. There's Cyber Monday. There are all these other days that consumers can go and get these great deals.
Right. And you know, what it boils down to is this ongoing battle for shoppers between online and brick-and-mortar retailers. The brick-and-mortar guys are losing that battle ultimately. And that's why they've gotten so creative, opening up, offering deals on Wednesday, opening on Thursday night and the rest. They are increasingly losing share. They will sell less than last year. But that's what drives it. Ultimately, for consumers, what it means is more options and less need to get in line on Friday morning.
And whether consumers go online or to the stores, Chris, are they concerned right now about the fiscal cliff? Do we have any sense of whether that is going to hold people back from doing some spending?
Look, what we know now, looking at things like consumer confidence and retail sales the last few months, consumers are essentially oblivious to the cliff. They have not changed their behavior. The thinking is that might change just because the focus in the press has switched from the election to the cliff.
Right.
But at the moment, it's something to worry about for retailers, but it's not evident in the data.
Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, for an on-the-scene view of Black Friday, let's get to Scott Tong, who is our reporter in Washington, and he's out on the streets of D.C. this morning with some shoppers. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So, Scott, this is a complicated case. How did we get here?
It goes back to 2001, when the government of Argentina defaulted on its debt. At the time, it negotiated a deal with its creditors saying, we're going to pay you about 30 cents on the dollar, and most creditors said, okay, we'll do that. Except a couple big U.S. hedge funds who held out and said, we're going to fight for everything we think we're owed. Buenos Aires over the years has refused, calling them capitalism vultures. One hedge fund responded by seizing an Argentine Navy ship in Africa,
right,
in a kind of global repo piracy spat. All of which takes us to Wednesday, when the judge ruled that the government of Argentina has to pay and threatened to force U.S. bank intermediaries to comply.
So is Argentina going to pay up now that the U.S. judge has said they have to?
Well, the deadline is December 15th under the ruling, but this could go up the ladder to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Hmm.
We did speak to Argentina's former Undersecretary of Finance, Daniel Marks, about the government's intransigence.
The stated position is nothing at all. I think there is a middle ground that is well known and accepted bankruptcy rules around the world.
So this middle ground, as he puts it, would have U.S. hedge fund lenders take the 30 cents on the dollar that everyone else did. I think there's a lot more to play out here.
Marketplace's Scott Tong in Washington for us. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome.
Now to a branding issue down in Mexico, or I guess I should say the United Mexican States. That's the official name of the country. But President Felipe Calderón wants to, if you will, get the United States out of Mexico and change the name to just plain old Mexico. Only potential hitch in the plans is that Mr. Calderón leaves office a week from tomorrow.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Well, if some of the ingredients in your Thanksgiving feast were a little more expensive than usual, it might have been because of the drought that hit the U.S. over the summer and impacted 80% of the nation's agricultural land. Food is likely to get even pricier by Christmas, as Sally Herships reports.
Some farmers are selling off their livestock today because they're worried about how to feed them tomorrow. It's all because of the drought this summer. Leslie Levesque is an economist with IHS Global.
Prices for wheat and corn spiked dramatically in July.
Farmers manage to grow feed crops like corn and soybeans, but still.
What's not a shortage of feed? It's the high price of feed.
John Stanton teaches food marketing at St. Joseph's University. He says when feed prices went up this summer, farmers sold their livestock early and cheap. So if you want a bargain at the grocery store, buy a frozen turkey now. Stanton says the closer we get to Christmas, the higher food prices will creep up.
Keep in mind, food prices are not likely to ever come down.
Consumers in developing countries are eating more like Americans, with diets heavy on meat, which means more demand for some of our favorite foods. But Stanton says don't cancel your Christmas dinner yet. Retailers are under pressure to keep prices low, so they'll be eating a good portion of the increases. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Well, if you do head out for some Black Friday shopping today, take a moment to think about where those products are made, probably in a big warehouse somewhere. But the way that warehouse operates may be changing with a greater focus on skilled workers and technology. From the Marketplace Wealth and Poverty Desk, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Every day, tens of thousands of warehouse workers across Southern California lift boxes by hand or forklift on hot, dusty, sometimes dangerous loading docks. Contrast that with the spanking new Skechers shoe warehouse out in the desert east of Los Angeles. Israeli-born businessman Ido Ben-Zevi developed this $250 million warehouse complex.
We're surrounded by a tremendous amount of very sophisticated equipment.
The building's all shiny glass and steel, solar panels, and reflecting pools. You might think they were mixing pharmaceuticals or chemicals, but what the equipment is actually mixing and matching is shoes, 21,000 boxes every hour.
But somebody may order, 30 shoes size 9 in blue and 12 shoes size 8 in red, and it has to pick all of these out of this huge, over half a mile long building.
The place is chock full of automated product pickers and computerized conveyor belts.
So this equipment can pick up all the way from a business card to a big box on its own. It will identify and understand exactly what it's picking up.
Does it then remember where it is when it needs to pull it?
Oh, absolutely. It better remember, right?
And here's the irony. For the 750 or so people who punch in here, the work is way better than in those old-school warehouses. The pay's better, it's cool and clean, there's even a gym. All this for a lucky few, says Ben-Zevi.
You're shifting people who may have been doing things manually to people who are programming the computers, managing the automation. There's probably less people, but higher-skilled people required. But that's the nature of the world. It's sort of like if you had a typing pool in the old days with companies had.
And Ben-Zevi is off on a philosophical disquisition on technology and change, a future where shoeboxes zip by at breakneck speed with barely a human hand ever touching them. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And we've got some photos taken inside that warehouse at marketplace.org. Finally, as you know, Hostess Brands is liquidating. It's becoming a little more difficult to get Twinkies anywhere in this country. People are stockpiling them. But you can still get them in Canada. That's because, according to Bloomberg News, Canada's largest dairy processor has the brand rights up north. So you better go rent a truck or something, get up there, make some money, sell them back down here. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.